Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by contributors from community radio stations across Canada. This episode of Groundwire was produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, on occupied Anishinaabeg-Aking, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiowak and the Nakota. I'm your host, Michael Welch. On today's show...
The Chilean people today want a new constitution. They don't want what Piñera is offering us.
I'm actually very proud of the Chilean people. I'm proud of my own family members because I have cousins that are going to these marches.
Justin Trudeau clearly said that money is no objection to building a treatment center at Brasenose First Nation. Should he back down, then that means he lied.
But first, here are the headlines. There have now been 39 homicides in the city of Winnipeg for 2019. With 2 months left in the calendar year, the homicide rate is too shy of the all-time record of 41 set in 2011. 2011 was also the year that an annual event called Meet Me at the Bell Tower was initiated as an act of defiance against the violence that was claiming so many lives. Organized by Aboriginal Youth Opportunities, the regular Friday evening event brings anywhere from a few dozen to over 100 people to an old bell tower in the impoverished North End neighborhood where people can come together in community to provide support, safe haven, and fellowship when living in Winnipeg's inner city can get overwhelming. Participants at the November 1st bell tower gathering would hear impassioned speeches from Indigenous elders and youth, including people who had suffered their own losses.
They're going to need your support because it's 30 years since I went through my loss, and this summer was one of the hardest. I disappeared for 3 months, and the only place I came was here to the bell tower because this is my sense of family.
A community gathering with North End members of the Legislative Assembly will have taken place on the evening of Wednesday, November 6th, alongside social development agencies and advocates, to share concerns and put forward recommendations to addressing the violence. More details can be found at the Facebook page for Meet Me at the Bell Tower, Stop the Violence. Our next headline comes from Catherine Fisher at CJLY on Sinaixt, Traditional Territory.
Public policy think tank the Broadbent Institute recently released a report about the ways that big data and data-driven technologies may reproduce the biases and partialities that already operate in the Canadian criminal justice system. Big data usually refers to the use of predictive analytics methods that extract value from data and use it to identify patterns. This may include every Google search, credit card purchase, social media interaction, and doctor's visit a person makes. Predictive justice uses data on past occurrences or behaviors to make decisions about the future, such as who and where will be policed, and if and how an individual should be sentenced. Big Data and Criminal Justice: What Canadians Should Know concludes that predictive justice technologies, which are already in use in several Canadian cities, may simply exacerbate, reproduce, and calcify existing biases within the system, bringing further consequences for vulnerable populations. It can be found on the Broadbent Institute's website at broadbentinstitute.ca.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back.
Dicen que ya no te quiero, porque no te lloro. Aquellas voces no caen desde el más allá. Pero ellos no saben que todos sus hijos son puro dolor.
You are listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. You just heard Winnipeg's The Mariachi Ghost with the title track from their latest album, Puro Dolor. Now it's time for our feature stories. Chile started making headlines in the month of October. Popular upheaval, which began with increases in subway fares, turned into countrywide revolt against the generalized neoliberal policies the population had been subjected to since the 1973 coup. The uprisings have inspired members of the diaspora in Canada to organize protests and actions of their own. Groundwire presents audio from two of the Canadian cities hosting demonstrations. We start with the following report from CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting on so-called Montreal, the traditional and unceded territory of the Ganyagahaga of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy.
Beginning in mid-October, Chilean people have been taking to the streets to protest austerity and rising inequality. In the last few weeks, Montrealers have gathered outside the Chilean consulate on Sherbrooke Street and Peel Street to show solidarity with those in Chile. CKUT was able to cover two of these protests, on October 25th and October 26th.
We wanted to support our people since the people have awakened in Chile to demand justice and to bring down the dictatorship that Pinochet left us with the constitution.
Today's an international petition demanding the Canadian government, Trudeau's Canadian government, to express their position or the horrendous things that are happening in Chile. And second, is asking not to go to the COP25, which is going to be in Chile, until the Chilean government retires the military people from the streets.
So right now, when you see the news about the last weekend, the president, democratic country, saying that he's in war with his population, they are using the same methodology that under Pinochet. So there's a lot of people killed, murdered, and tortured, and it's not normal.
The Chilean people today want a new constitution. They don't want what Piñera is offering us. It's easy to say, well, take the military off the streets, but what we really want is a new constitution so that we stop with Pinochet's dictatorships that he left behind.
To ask a new constitution, because after the dictatorship, the constitution not really changed. It's changed already for the show of things, you know, but in fact, it's never really changed. And the poverty and the inequality is pretty strong and not normal. So yes, it's a duty to do it.
Since the US-backed coup in 1973, Chile has been operating under a hyper-capitalist society that left much of the population disprivileged.
There were awful conditions. Today we have people who have been tortured, killed, and there's over 2,000 people in prison. It's crazy that a government who calls themselves democracy today is taking the military to harm the people of Chile simply because they're tired of the conditions they live. Somebody who is retired gets about $200 a month. Who lives with $300 a month when the food costs the same thing as it costs here in Canada? It's ridiculous. They're starving to death. They're starving their people who actually retire. And the minimum wage in Chile, it's $500. Who lives with $500 today anywhere in the world? It is a shame that our government has actually made the rich richer and the poorer poorer.
Demonstrators at the Montreal rallies wanted to dispel the myth that the sole reason of the protests were a rise in subway fare. Rather, the demonstrations were a culmination of decades of austerity measures that caused drastic inequality within Chilean society. Canada has played a major role in the unequal systems that have led to this revolution. For example, the Ontario Teachers' Pension Plan is the largest investor in Chile's private water sector.
Their interests have come before. You know that the Chilean, the Barrick Gold Company there, they have dried the south of Chile. And they actually own some of the properties, and they're not allowing people to have regular drinking waters. We have trucks that deliver water to the people in the south of Chile. Since when is the water private? No, actually, you know what? The problem here is that the Canadian government has too much invested in Chile, but not on the people. And they don't care how many people die. And the lies of Venezuela, the lies of all this Ecuador, and the lies about Chile, it's too much. It's enough. Tell the truth about what your investments and what you're covering up. And Justin is just another puppet of the United States. In Chile, the media is run by the rich and powerful people. How can they actually report the truth? They lie. They constantly lie and they don't tell the truth. They're not even actually telling how many deaths and how many. It's unacceptable. And the Canadian government should actually voice themselves, but they're cowards because they don't do it. They're not listening. They don't care. Because actually all the communications in Canada are also run by rich people. Let's not face it. We have our own crisis here in Canada. We're not that free and we're not that well. Things, if we can see, we're privatizing more and more each day. As Canadians are also have, what pensions will we have if we continue in the way we're going? We will be going in the same way Chile is today. So yes, I want to say today, Canadians, wake up. Wake up, because what happens in Chile will happen to us if we don't wake up. You have to start voting for people that make sense, not for people that will continue in the same trend of the imperialist life.
That report was supplied by Zoe Makivna of CKUT 90.3 FM with editing assistance from Omer Rahmatullah of the Groundwire Coordination Team. On Thursday, October 24th, over 100 people demonstrated in front of the Canadian Museum for Human Rights in downtown Winnipeg on Occupied Anishinaabega King, the homeland of the Métis Nation and the historical territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota. CKUW was present to capture the mood and the voices of the participants.
Everybody that is present, and right now in Chile, it's about 40 people dead because of the protest. 21 women raped, 120 people injured because of the military on the street. So right now I want to make a minute of silence for the people that pass away because of their belief, because of what they want to achieve back home. So please enjoy me in a minute of silence. Thank you.
My name is Ana Vergara. I'm the president of the Winnipeg Chilean Association in Winnipeg. What I see back home in my country, like you see militaries, like troops on the street, and that's only happened in 1973. And that's not acceptable. Like, if they're like, you know, like, put a time when people can stay outside, instead of, like, I don't know how you call that in English, but when the president put a time up to 10 o'clock, you can be in the street. And then after that, military people are in the street, and they can shoot you, they can kill you. So far, it's 42 people dead, 21 women raped, 120-something people injured, just because they speak their mind, just because they're just asking the government to change the things. So that's very similar to what happened in 1973. We're not in a war, like Piñera said. We're just demanding what is ours, our rights of freedom of speech, free education, proper retirement, stuff like that. We're not in a war. We're just asking for what is ours.
My name is Germano. I'm a soccer referee, and I was refereeing a soccer game indoor, and some of a sudden the light came off, the power came off. And I was coming from a meeting organizing this. But my mind was so in that meeting still at that time, when I see the light came off, completely off on the field, my memory went back to Chile right away. What happened? I mean, when they gonna start shooting? I spent 1 year in a concentration camp as well, so all that memory refreshing, I mean, what is going on today in Chile is refreshing those moments. That's the reason why I'm here.
My name is Pedro Pontanilla. I'm an ex-member of the Chilean Air Force. I was in prison for almost 2 years and arrived here in Canada in 1975 after the coup. I was expelled from the country.
My name is Bernice Pontanilla, and I am Pedro's daughter, and I was born here in Winnipeg. It has been devastating for us, especially Chileans outside of Chile, to see the violence that the military and the police have perpetrated on the Chilean people. Of course, a big difference today to 1973 is that everyone down there has cell phones. So we're seeing all of the abuses practically live, like I'm watching them every day. And that has been devastating for us Chileans because we always said, nunca más, never again. I'm actually very proud of the Chilean people. I'm proud of my own family members because I have cousins that are going to these marches. If media had paid attention more to what's going on the ground, it wouldn't be such a surprise when there's an uprising in Chile or in Argentina or in Ecuador, all these countries that people seem to think that are okay because they have right-wing governments.
Mr. Prime Minister, take seriously. This problem is in Latin America, from Mexico to the South. Be strong, you know, when the violation of the human rights isn't there.
be strong and condemn that one. Don't be, you know, a lie for those one, you know, who have so much money, they don't care. We need, you know, updated, you know, our right. It's the right of the people, not only in Chile, and all Latin America. We have so rich, you know, resources. So help us, you know, to develop with our own hand. The people who live in different countries, you know, develop, you know, and try, you know, to have, you know, a decent life. A decent life. We're not asking, you know, for more than that.
For our final feature, we provide a report on a press conference which took place at the Steelworkers Hall in downtown Toronto on Monday, October 28th, in which the sons of recently deceased Grassy Narrows Chief Simon Fobister called on the re-elected Trudeau government to make good on commitments made 2 years ago and during the recent election campaign to build and operate a Mercury Care home in the northwestern Ontario First Nations community. Grassy Narrows has for the past half century been suffering as a result of 10 tons of mercury from a Dryden, Ontario paper mill, which had been dumped into the English and the Wabigoon River systems, according to a team of Japanese researchers led by Masanori Hanada. 90% of the people of Grassy Narrows and Wabasimoong First Nation show signs of mercury poisoning. In his first public statement since the late chief's death, son Leroy Fobister spoke at their conference about his father's commitment to getting the Mercury home built and of the importance of this facility to community members and Canadians generally.
Yeah, he was a very strong advocate, and he was right with it, with wanting to have the building done for the community. And with this building, what the Mercury would do, it would make us get a little bit more advanced on Mercury study, and also the Canadians would understand from us too, from a little bit of like our advanced technologies, whatever that could come out of it, that they can learn from this building that we're trying to build. So in the future, that's, I'm really hoping we can get this thing done, because it should be kept as a promise of what Trudeau has said.
Current Chief Rudy Turtle ran as an NDP candidate in the federal riding in which Grassy Narrows is located. He ended up losing in the last federal election to a 21-year-old rookie candidate running for the Conservative Party. Chief Turtle spoke about the promise made to the community by the Prime Minister.
A few years ago, Dean Philpott promised a Mercury Treatment Center to the people of Grassy Narrows, and we've been pursuing that these past few years. We've been negotiating with the Government of Canada. Our negotiations have stalled due to differences in the funding amounts and also in the design. Justin Trudeau clearly said that money is no objection to building a treatment center at Grassy Narrows First Nation. Should he back down, then that means he lied right in front of everybody, right? Lied in front of Canada. And we will hold him accountable for his words.
Bill Fobister, a revered elder in the community, also ailing from mercury poisoning, elaborated on the need to build the facility sooner rather than later.
It's quite an expense to visit our relatives who are sick with mercury poisoning. So with having a home in our community would be ideal, because we would be able to help and be with our family who are contaminated by mercury poisoning. Now, as I speak, a lot of our youth are dying. You know, there's young men who died of stroke, heart attack, you name it. And also more recently now, the babies are being affected. A couple of our babies have passed on. So I really hope that Trudeau will keep his word. A promise is something very delicate to us. If someone promised to us, we believe the person. And that should be made clear to our leader today. There's a high water arising right now, and more of that mercury will filter into the Wabagoon River system once again. We have warned them before that what if something, an outflow of that.
Listeners can get more details about the community's ongoing efforts to realize the new center with background on the tragedy by visiting the site freegrassy.net. Audio from that report was obtained from the Free Grassy Facebook page. You're still listening to Groundwire Community Radio News, broadcasting from coast to coast to coast and available online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. This week, we profile CKCU 93.1 FM, which is located at Carleton University in Ottawa, on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg people. The station was in the midst of its annual fund drive and coming off the heels of special election programming. To get further details, we reached out to Chris Iconomopoulos. He's the chair of the station's board of directors.
CKCU got licensed to broadcast on FM in 1975, and actually November 15th, 1975, so we're coming up to 44 years. Station was kind of like a radio club before that, but since then, we've been largely a campus and community-based radio station on the campus of Carleton University, similar to other stations across the country, servicing not only students and what happens on campus, but a lot of other community organizations and non-Carleton-related groups and avenues representing Ottawa.
As reported in previous installments of Groundwire, campus-based radio stations all across Ontario are struggling with uncertain funding springing from Premier Ford's initiative allowing students to opt in or opt out of student groups when they pay their university fees. Most campus stations are heavily reliant on funding through a student levy on tuition to stay afloat. Chris explains how CKCU is attempting to cope with the changes and how this year's fund drive is adapting to the challenge.
The main things that we focused on was creating even more awareness among students of what we do as a radio station, the access that students have to what we provide. So whether that's on-air training or just media training, interviews, all that. CKCU is proud to consider itself kind of like a training ground for anybody who comes through. So that value to students and the awareness that students have a radio station on campus that they can access is something that we sort of had a renewed push for on that. Aside from on campus, it was kind of also partnering with different organizations that were also under threat. So we're in the early stages right now of starting a new podcast project, which will see us provide a lot of services to organizations who may have lost part of their voice or their entire voice, so at least we can help them retain some of what they were doing. So it's just kind of been a lot of, like I said, just diversifying where we get revenues from, and then just trying to increase what we provide to community to kind of get across those values and try and gain support that way. The other large thing that we did is we have our funding drive running right now, from October 25th to November 17th, and it happens every year, but we've extended it by a week, and we've increased the goal for our funding drive by quite a bit, and that's to make up for the loss in revenues right now. It's to make up for future loss in revenues because the opt-out option from the Student Choice Initiative, which is the Ontario government legislation, isn't only once. We lost a significant amount of funding this September, but students can opt out semester to semester. So come the winter term, I mean, we're expecting to lose more. Come next fall, we're expecting to lose more. So it's an ongoing issue. So we've increased our goal to try and get ahead of the loss as much as we can. And just to also let our listeners and our community know that this isn't a one-time thing, and we're definitely looking for additional support this year to stay ahead of the curve, so to speak.
On October 21st, just a few short days before the fund drive kicked off, CKCU took on the notable role of providing live coverage of the federal election night as the ballots were being counted and the results coming in. Brendan McLaughlin, who regularly hosts the political affairs program The Filibuster, brought the special program to as many as 16 separate campus stations. Brendan explained to us what made this program unique.
Barry Rook. He is the executive director of the NCRA, and Luke Smith, who's the Learning and Development Officer of the NCRA, the National Community and Campus Radio Association, approached me, and they asked if I could host this program. They asked if me and my co-hosts were involved. My co-hosts were unfortunately indisposed at the time, and I took up the hosting of that program because of my experience. Luke also came on as my co-host. We decided to cover different topics that weren't necessarily much discussed in the following up of the election. So, for example, Luke took his expertise on LGBTQ issues and had some great segments and interviews on the program. I did some interviews with, we had this one guest, Vicky Theodore. She came on. She was a former Master's of Political Management student at Carleton at the Clayton Riddell Program, School of Political Management. And she also worked at the Senate offices here in Ottawa at Parliament Hill. And she had a lot of insider knowledge and experience. And as a woman of color, she was able to identify and comment on a lot of issues that were coming up about race and racism, you know, up on the Prime Minister's part, on Andrew Scheer's social conservatism part, on how Jagmeet Singh has handled issues of racism. Mm-hmm. But we did have a fantastic time, and our team of researchers and guests was top-notch. And a lot of people told me that they turned off the CBC just to listen to our program. So I really think that we did accomplish what we set out to do, and there was no real issues regarding like our coverage, and it, you know, people ended up going to the polls very happy, I think, and we were able to make a lot of key predictions, as well as just covering the basic content and issues that were not necessarily covered by the majority of the news coverage.
As of Monday, November 4th, CKCU's fund drive has raised one third of its goal of $250,000. The drive runs until November 17th, with phone lines open between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. local time. Contributions can be sent online at www.ckcufm.com/pledge. That was our community radio report. Up next, a short musical break.
I wanna be cool.
You just heard Shotgun Jimmy with Cool All the Time from the recent album Transistor Sister 2. That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on occupied Anishinaabeg Akin, the homeland of the Métis Nation, the historical territory of the Nahiwak and the Nakota. Headlines this week were written by Catherine Fisher and Michael Welch. We also thank Zoe Makivna and Ome Rahamtula for their contributions. Music this week was from The Mariachi Ghost and Shotgun Jimmy. I've been your host, Michael Welch. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca. Thanks for listening.